Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I am here today with Aaron Mbati, and hopefully I said that somewhat right. You can correct it when we get going here. He is a portfolio director at the Schmidt Family Foundation. Aaron manages a portfolio of impact investments in clean energy and sustainable food systems with a focus on Africa and emerging markets. We got connected maybe 6-9 months ago, specifically around this idea of Africa. You will give us some of your background. You're from Africa, and I hear you'll be going back to Africa for an extended period here shortly. So thank you and welcome for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Thank you for having me on this podcast. I am Aaron Mbati. I grew up in Kitale, Kenya, an agricultural town situated at the base of Mount Elgon near the Ugandan border with Kenya. And Kitale is often referred to as Kenya's breadbasket due to its fertile farmland. My education journey started at Kitale Primary School, followed by St. Joseph's High School, also in Kitale. And then I later pursued a Bachelor of Science in Food Science and Technology at the University of Nairobi. And about a decade later, I earned an MBA in finance from the same institution. I began my career in commercial banking, working for 5 different banks over 9 years. I specialized in corporate banking, serving local and multinational corporations. However, my first role was a microcredit officer, providing small loans to traders and urban farmers. So my career took a pivotal turn in 2015 when I transitioned to impact investing. I was hired to establish the Africa Operations for Global Partnerships, a Seattle-based impact investing firm. And this was my steepest learning curve. I had to shift from purely commercial mindset to impact-driven investing, where capital is a tool for social an environmental good rather than just a wealth multiplier. Impact investing deeply resonated with my values, making it the most fulfilling career choice for me. So in 2020, I moved to the US, continuing with my work with global partnerships and pursued a global executive MBA at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business, just to expand my knowledge and network and prepare myself for advancement in my career. So after 7 years as a VP for Global Partnerships Africa Portfolio, I joined the Schmidt Family Foundation as Portfolio Director in its Impact Investing Program. And my focus is on investing in companies that enable clean energy access and resilient food systems in Africa.
Well, I think that this is exactly why you're on this podcast, because the experiences that you've had and your day-to-day implementation is exactly what we want to talk about. Now, I recognize we need to be careful from a regulatory standpoint that we keep this above board and not delve into stuff on the regulatory side too deep. But so let me just go back to your childhood and how you grew up. And just to kind of set the stage, so you grew up, would it be growing up like I grew up in the States, or how is it similar, different from your perspective? Now, you don't know who I grew up. I grew up in the state of Oregon. You know, I grew up in Southern Oregon. Actually, it was a logging town. But if you were just to generalize, give us a context of how you grew up, probably to how the average American grew up.
My growing up experience is totally different. I grew up, I'd say, rural town and spent a lot of time on my grandfather's farm on the foothills of Mount Elgon. So obviously did not have electricity and didn't have toys and things of that nature. We literally made our own toys and played with them. It was fun. We played in the bush a lot, herding cattle. I learned to find wild grapes, wild fruits, and you know, could tell what's poisonous from what's edible.
Obviously, you figured it out because you're here today. So you only ate edible ones.
Yeah. I mean, we would tell that by smelling what's not edible. And so growing up, I was very outgoing, outdoors, not by choice, but that was what the circumstances, you know, allowed. But it was fun because it was spontaneous. I felt like I had a lot of freedom and it allowed me to be very creative and you know, to be able to respond to challenges that emerge unexpectedly. And I think that growing up experience where, you know, I'd say we had plenty, but also you, if you viewed it in a different perspective, it's like we had scarcity. But I think I had fun growing up. I got the skills I needed and the attitude that, you know, drives me to this day.
So this is not to pick on your kids, but kids are here with you in the United States. How do you think their experience will be different than yours in some positive and negative ways?
My kids, they don't believe it when I share my growing up experience. They're like, what do you mean? How can people even live like that? I would say my kids are privileged in a different way. They also were born in Kenya, in Mombasa, grew up there, grew up in Nairobi. They've also lived in my rural home a little bit during holidays. So they have a very, I think, broad experience, you know, also having moved to the US. So they have a broader worldview. They are more culturally diverse than I was. And I think they have access to better opportunities than I had, especially for education. But they are not used, you know, they haven't lived with scarcity. I thank God that I have done well in my career. They were born when I had a job. And by the standards in Kenya, I think I was doing well throughout my career as they grew up. They've never had to lack anything, you know, be it food, be it toys, or, you know, the things that we desired as children. They've never had to lack that. And so I constantly remind them not to take it for granted, kids who don't have what they have. And so every year when I take them back to Kenya, I take them to visit my relatives in the rural areas, take them to where I grew up. I take them to mud houses with grass thatch. And I tell them, these people who live here, they would like to live where you live as well. Like, you know, the life opportunities you have. So you need to be grateful for what you have. You also need to respect those who don't have and take advantage of the opportunities you have and make sure that, you know, you always look to uplift those who didn't access the privileges that you have access to.
So I'm going to switch gears here. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to switch gears in light of what we're just talking about, because you come with a unique perspective, at least unique from, you know, the average American person, let's just say. So one of the things that I always say in the impact investing space is that there's way more creativity and innovation that happens in impact investing than I think most actually would think or consider. So I want to take your story. You grew up, you just said, you had to find your own toys, you were doing creative stuff. How do you think your worldview of how you grew up makes you a better investment manager today?
I think the most important thing is that growing up, I recognized that I had a lot of the things I needed around me. I didn't look at things with a scarcity mindset. If we wanted to have fun as kids, we would, you know, figure out what to get from around us and create fun. You know, we could create balls to play with, we could create things to swing or different kinds, we could swim in rivers. You know, that has led me to understand that a lot of times we wait for somebody to come from, you know, outside and offer us what we need, yet what we need is just around us. Mm. And so I think as I do my work, my work is mostly about enabling Africans to harness the resources that they have already abundantly. And so the way I structure investments is I look for companies that have identified, you know, those opportunities in African communities where they're experiencing, you know, certain challenges, but they also have, you know, resources around them that can be transformed into services, goods and services that benefit the people. So, you know, that creativity allows me to structure around risks and also view risks that are real, but not just perceived risks. You know, growing up in these communities, I also understand that a lot of risks are mostly perception, because there's not so much data. Like when, as an investor in the US, you know, if you search various databases, you'll find information about companies, but in Africa, you don't have that kind of information. So you have to do the legwork, you have to do the research, you have to go out there and learn where the boundaries are. And so I think it's just a different approach. You know, you have to find the information that's lacking so that you can be able to assess what are the risks and what are the opportunities. Yeah, so a lot of creativity is required, you know, also in the way that capital is brought together, you know, like blended finance mechanisms, bringing different types of investors with different interests to the table, and, you know, bringing those different pools of capital together to enable, you know, Africa unlock its economic opportunities.
So you and I have talked about this in the past. I look at you and the role that you're in, and it is so cool that you grew up in Africa, were in the banking system, got to know all that. You come to the U.S., which, by the way, are you a big Duke fan? That was a tough loss the other night. I had them winning the whole thing.
Yeah. I'm not a big basketball fan.
Okay.
Fan. Yeah.
Well, that was a bummer. But anyways, where you sit today is such an amazing place because you grew up in Africa. We're in the banking system there. So you learned all that. You came to the U.S., and I'm probably speaking this a little more bluntly, and you now have this money that you get to make decisions and allocate back to Africa. So you're in a unique spot. Plus, you get to, you know, educate and Americans and whatnot investing in Africa. So I'm envious of the spot that you sit. So as you think about sitting on the continent here in the U.S., investing in Africa, and this is not investment advice, but what do you think are the big misperceptions that investors have towards investing in Africa?
The biggest misperceptions is that it's risky. Investors will just say it's risky. That has been disproven the way the credit rating agencies have made mistakes. If you could look at actual examples, for example, of countries that are given higher risk rating, but they've never defaulted. And then you look at other countries, maybe in the global north, that have received better risk ratings but have defaulted. And then I think the problem of lack of data means that there's not so much information, and therefore lack of information is replaced with being risky. If you don't know, it's risky. So
right.
What I'd say is investors need to do the work and find a way of knowing, as opposed to it's easy to say, if I don't know that's risky, I can't do it.
Right.
But I think if you want to find opportunity, you have to do the hard work of going and learning what it is about. And I personally, I'd say when I worked for the fund that I worked for previously, I had to set up shop in Nairobi for that fund and start doing investments. At the beginning, of course, there was that perception of risk. After about 6.5 years, by the time I was leaving, that perception had totally changed, because there were no significant losses. I'd say the losses were very minimal, far from expected. And for the most part, we had a portfolio that was performing quite well. So, and through my career, even to date, the investments have done generally perform well, you know, especially those that are in markets that have, let's say, countries where there's peace and stability, companies are thriving. Because there's population growth, there's young people that are really outgoing, entrepreneurial, there's actual needs that translate to market for businesses, there's actual resources in the form of human capital and other natural renewable resources that inputs for businesses to transform to valuable products and services. So the fundamentals strong, information is not as vast as you have in developed markets, but I think there's a growing body of information and examples that can demonstrate that it's not as risky as perceived.
So it's interesting. I spent the first 20 years of my career in the real estate investment space, working for a company. We would invest billions of dollars into real estate. And what's interesting about the real estate market is one could argue it's not as efficient as public markets, which is really where you can have some advantage. So when I hear you speak, not to dismiss that there aren't real risk, but if you have the knowledge and the expertise, you actually are in a very unique spot to not only reduce risk, but then potentially even outperform. Does that sound crazy in my analysis?
There, risks are real, and there are risks just like investing in any other place. What's needed is, you know, the ability to understand what the actual risks are and where the opportunities are. And I think that's what I bring, because I do understand the local context, understand what really are risks that could materialize, and then structure investments to mitigate those risks, and then, you know, be able to then access the opportunities that are available, or potential opportunities that come out of investing. So I'd say, and there are people who have that knowledge. A lot of them are investment professionals based in the continent, or some of them have worked there that have this type of knowledge. And so if you look at those who have knowledge, they are actually generating returns for investors because they understand. Yeah. They've taken the time to separate what is real and what is just perceived risks.
Quick comment. So, you know, my younger brother lives in Rwanda. We're investing in the solar and renewable assets out there, run the River Hydro. And obviously going there and seeing it totally changes your paradigm, generally in a very positive area. However, I will say, like, one of the areas where we've done some investing in Kenya, like if you were to go look at an office where the families or the people for the households come to get their service, like that office building doesn't even fit into the paradigm of how we think about an office building. You know, and I could see where some people, if they just saw that in any context, would be like, look, this is a cement building that's got a little bit of paint and some doors and windows. Like, how can that be an office? And you're like, no, this is a great office. And in fact, it's a flourishing business. But unless you had that context, it'd be like, I don't know if I would invest in that. Does that make sense?
It does. So if you look at companies like this telco giant called Safaricom in Kenya that owns this mobile money market service called M-Pesa. So M-Pesa has millions of agents that are the interface between the customers and the company. And these agents are small, tiny kiosks that are all over the place, even in the most rural of places in Kenya, but these agents transact billions in a day. So that's an example of, if you look at that agent in isolation, typically a tin structure, 3, maybe 5 by 5 feet, you would think this is not a business you'd invest in. But if you looked deeper, the customers have no issue with that. The business is backed by strong software and systems and a very strong company behind it. And the customers know that. And they get value, you know, from those services. So that's just an example of, it doesn't have to look the way you think it should, but as long as it offers the services.
This is a big question. You can answer it however you want. It doesn't have to be about your specific job today. Just, it's a general question, because you've had an interesting life, an interesting career. How would you best describe who you are in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
Let me say, looking back, I never imagined I would come this far. But I was always very ambitious and relentless in pursuing my goal. I am deeply grateful to God, you know, for my career and the progress I've made, you know, and because my work aligns closely with my personal value. You know, so today I'm in a position of influence and responsibility, and I see it as my duty to empower Africans to reach their full potential by, you know, harnessing the vast renewable resources that they are endowed with. So I couldn't ask for a more meaningful assignment, Jeff. I feel like I'm exactly where I want to be in my journey right now.
To hear you say that, what a gift that is, because not everybody can say that. In fact, I would say a lot of people can't say that. So as an outsider who's, you know, known you for 9 months, it is so cool to see how you are positioned to do what you're doing is so cool. And so that's part of the reason why I wanted you on this podcast, is to go, we need to get your stories, you know, what you have done personally, how you view Africa. There's just huge potential. Anyways, okay, also get off that soapbox for a second. Let me go one other, and you may have already answered this. So how would you talk about, how are you trying to change the world? Is it, whether it's big, whether it's small, how do you fit into that?
As an impact investor, I believe that investment and not just aid is what Africa truly needs to unlock its potential. You know, growing up in Africa, I experienced both its cultural richness and the challenges caused by, you know, lack of infrastructure and essential services. So one defining experience is I went through high school and university without electricity at home, but was lucky to access boarding schools and even the university itself, where I had access to lighting for studying at night and other essential uses. So you can take that for granted, especially if you live in the US, but that personal experience has ingrained in me the profound impact that access to electricity has on opportunity and development. Kids who are able to study in the evening for longer hours have better opportunity of performing well, transitioning to the next level of education, and eventually changing their lives. And also, if you look at, I looked at a place where I grew up when electricity came, I saw how the small village market sprang up into vibrant trading centers, all thanks to electricity. A lot of businesses popped up, and I could see how there was that ripple effect of just the fact that people had access to energy. At the Schmidt Family Foundation, I invest in companies building solar-powered mini-grids that bring electricity to rural communities for the first time. I have been to Liberia, where I saw kids in a village where they got light from mini-grids. And, you know, I remember the excitement of, you know, the kids seeing how their streets were lit up at night thanks to these solar-powered mini-grids. Sorry, not Liberia, that was Benin. And besides energy, I also invest in agribusinesses that support African smallholder farmers in practicing regenerative agriculture, restoring land, and honoring traditional stewardship rather than adopting an extractive mindset. So these investments create real and lasting change, proving that capital can be a force for good in underserved communities.
Well, I need to take you on the road with me. Because two things. Number one, you know, in what we do at Fortis Green, it is, I don't know how to properly communicate to an American the foundational nature that energy brings to development, to human flourishing, because it's just so ingrained and we take it for granted. I mean, look, I'm a faith guy. I have a deep belief in God, and it's part of what directs me to do what I'm doing. And I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. I can't tell you how many discussions I've had in the faith community where they question how faith-oriented is power. And I just want to scream and say, it's foundational. It's even in a faith context, it's so important for human developing, for spiritual development, all this stuff. But I have to almost not scream because that's the general response. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, it is. Like, you can't take it for granted the things that you have access to that enable your daily life. And if you think of it, energy runs almost all of it. You know, it runs almost all of it. So it's as though, like, somebody who doesn't have access is almost, I'd say, disabled. They are kind of disabled. I've seen both situations where I had access and where I didn't have access. And the difference is huge. I remember, you know, growing up, we had a television set that was a DC TV. And we would have to charge an old truck battery to watch wrestling. So wrestling is the only thing watched. And I think it was on Wednesdays. And everyone would come from neighboring homes and sit around our living room just to enjoy wrestling. And it was a big deal. So everyone would ask me, are you going to charge your battery for, you know, this week's wrestling? And I'm like, yeah, the battery's charged. It's ready. You know, we'll enjoy wrestling. You know, that was something that, you know, was a fun activity. But today, people are able to access information through their mobile phones. They could access the internet. They could access education, financial services, and a lot of other things simply because they had access to energy.
When did you realize the power of capital? And what does that mean to you?
My first realization of capital's transformational power came when I worked as a microcredit officer at Equity Bank in Kenya. So I saw hundreds of business owners that I worked with grow wealth through their enterprise. That was made possible by having access to finance. You know, I provided loans to people based on social capital, like as long as they, somebody in their network could vouch for them, saying that they trust them. That was all we had to kind of hold as collateral, because these are people that have nothing. And over a span of a few years, a lot of those entrepreneurs had acquired real assets, and they could now even provide collateral to banks to provide, you know, larger, you know, amounts of capital as they continue to grow their enterprise. And so that was in the commercial banking context. But as an impact investor, I've seen how capital can unlock potential in communities that were previously deemed too risky for investment. So, you know, through my work, I've been able to, you know, deploy capital in several rural areas, you know, through be it microfinance institutions or agribusinesses, you know, that had business models. I could see the transformation that this capital was able to bring about. You know, the companies made good returns, whereas the end users or the farmers or the people that, you know, engaged with those companies also got empowered. And the whole community, you know, benefited. And, you know, by extension, those countries had positive impact to their GDP and other, you know, developmental metrics. In fact, a great example was during COVID-19, I observed African microfinance institutions in my portfolio at the time that demonstrated remarkable resilience, defying expectations. A lot of investors expected default, a lot of default from these institutions, but that wasn't the case, you know, because the people, the underlying borrowers were more resilient and they were able to weather the storm, and they continued to pay their loans and continue to seek more funding to continue with the work they do.
That's counterintuitive to what one might think if you're just underwriting somebody's word or versus their capital. It's actually quite encouraging, because you would hope that somebody's word is even more valuable than whatever capital or resources they have. So, okay, I'm going to switch this next question up on you a little bit. One of the things we talk about on this podcast is obviously the power of capital, and we talk about stewardship, but I'm going to frame this for you in a little different way. If you could get on national TV today and you had whatever 3 minutes to share, what could Africans teach Americans about stewardship?
Stewardship, from my, say, African perspective, is about responsible care, management, and preservation of natural resources to ensure they are available for future generations. In the agriculture context, I'd say, you know, a lot of Africans have their traditional ways of eating, preserving their seeds. You know, they have their ways of growing and cooking their food that they've done for generations. That food was and is healthy. It was part of their culture. And I think a lot of that is getting lost as, you know, these seed systems are coming in that are forcing, you know, farmers to abandon their old practices or lose their culture and traditions. And adopt, you know, GMOs and other types of farming that's not sustainable. So, you know, I would say stewardship is not just about increasing productivity, but, you know, producing in a sustainable way, so that treating the earth as a mother, not just as something to extract from. So that's what I'd say, that, you know, we need to survive on this earth, but we need to also give back to it and make sure that it caters to our needs during our time, but also can cater to the generations that come after us.
Is stewardship the word, and I don't know if that word is used in Africa, is that more tied to land, or is that because land is what people generally have versus capital?
Land is generally what people have. That's their biggest source of capital as a factor of production, and everything revolves around land. From the context of what I do, you know, because my role is managing and deploying capital. So, you know, I would say at the Schmidt Family Foundation, stewardship in that context is, at the foundation, we work to restore a balanced relationship between people and planet. And specifically for the work I do in Africa, That's investing in renewable energy solutions, resilient food systems, healthy oceans, and environmental conservation, human rights protection. You know, so stewardship means we are custodians, but not owners of the planet, and we must act accordingly.
Well, look, this has been awesome to hear from you, just the wealth of experience that you've had, not only in your career, but also, you know, living and growing up in Africa. So if you could have a dream come true, and if you need to put two in there, that's fine too, but what would a dream come true for you? And if it's helpful, I can take your family out of it so that nobody feels left out. But anyways, if you had a dream or two to come true in your lifetime, what would it be?
Yeah, so one dream for me is that is for the Democratic Republic of Congo. I'm a haven of peace and prosperity in Africa. Having invested in clean energy projects in the DRC, you know, I've seen the resilience and potential of its people. However, it's heartbreaking to witness the ongoing conflict, suffering, loss of innocent lives in a country that's so rich in resources and human potential. So I dream of a DRC where every citizen can live in peace, thrive, and achieve their full potential, you know, because they are wealthy people that are endowed and should not be suffering the way they're suffering.
Your answer shouldn't have shocked me, but it did. And I love that. You know, generally, when you hear dreams, I don't think about somebody necessarily it solely be on their neighbor, you know, in essence, they were your neighbor. That's a really cool dream. Did you have another dream?
Generally, the other dream I have is, and this is broad, is I'd like to see the country and the region where I come from become prosperous, you know, because there's a lot of two steps forward, one step back. There's a lot of challenges, you know, when I look at, let's say, Kenya and countries in Africa as they're trying to bring development for their people, but there's amidst many challenges, you know, I see the potential of the young people, particularly in these countries. And I dream that these young people can have the opportunities that they need, because they have a lot of potential to create wealth and prosperity. So I think there's a mismatch where I'm seeing so much potential and I'm seeing no opportunities. And so my dream is just to find a way that this can be fixed. It's bigger than me. It's bigger than one, you know, any individual organization can do. And that's why it's a dream. It's far from achievable for me, but it's one dream that I carry all the time.
Yeah, but I think it's a dream that could, I don't know how complicated, but it can happen. And my little data point is, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, but if you go to Rwanda today, I'm going to put myself in two scenarios. I go to Rwanda today and see what it is today. Go back to the mid-90s and see what it was like in the mid-90s. And I'm assuming people would say there's not a chance on earth that where we are today can go to where it is today. And it truly is a ashes to beauty story. And so to me, if you just look, and there's plenty of examples, but if you just look at that on its own, I mean, the genocide probably is one of the worst things that could ever happen. And to see where it is as a country is stunning. And then you take Africa and go, look how big it is resources-wise. Look how many people it has. Look how many young people. And if that can start to transition and change, in fact, I'll say it this way, if you don't understand what's happening in Africa, you don't understand the economics of the globe over the next 50 years, because it could radically change for the positive.
I totally agree. And I have seen a lot of that transformation. You know, growing up to this day, there's been huge transformation in Kenya and even Rwanda. I've been there several times. It's been huge transformation. So somebody who grew up in the 70s or 80s knows what I'm talking about. The kids who were born, the Gen Zs may not, because, you know, they were born when a lot of the stuff already there. But I've seen a lot of that transformation and I am very optimistic. And that's why I have this dream. And every day I work to make that dream come true. So that's why I said I'm where I want to be in my career, because every day I put in efforts towards that dream.
Yeah, that is so cool. Well, thank you, Aaron, for your authenticity. Thank you for what you're doing. I hope that our listeners in some form or fashion can help plug in to make your dream a reality. I know that we at Common Good are doing our little small part, and we will continue to hopefully grow that bigger and bigger. So anyways, thank you so much. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing in space. Until next time, I'm Jeff Schaefer. Aaron, anything you want to say in closing? Or
I'll just say thank you for having me, Jeff.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.